Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 80.
Emperor Jin's so-called abdication to Cao Pi. This wasn't just any transition. It marked the end of the Han Dynasty. 400 years. Gone. Where did this whole push even begin? How did they start the ball rolling?
Well, the initial move was quite calculated. You had officials like Hua Shen leading the charge. They started petitioning Emperor Xian, basically asking him to step down.
Okay, but on what grounds? You can't just ask an emperor to quit.
Right. They had a two-pronged argument. First, they piled praise on Cao Pi, the king of Wei, said his virtues were off the charts, better even than the legendary sage kings Yao and Shen.
High praise indeed.
And second, this was the crucial part, they argued the Han's time was up. The mandate of heaven, that divine right to rule, was exhausted. Heaven and the people, they claimed, wanted Cao Pi now.
Ah, the mandate of heaven. So less a political memo, more like a spiritual eviction notice.
Exactly. That concept, Tianming, it wasn't just flowery language. People deeply believed that rulers needed heaven's blessing. If things went wrong, disasters, unrest, it was a sign the mandate was lost.
And that belief could be, well, weaponized.
Precisely. It was the perfect tool to legitimize what was essentially a power grab.
They didn't stop there, did they? There were signs, omens.
Oh, yes. They brought out the mystical evidence. Lai Fu, another official, presented this list of auspicious signs. Things like the mythical Kilin appearing, a phoenix landing,
wow,
a yellow dragon emerging, special grain growing, even sweet dew falling from the sky, all supposedly happening since Cao Pi became king of Wei.
So basically, nature itself was endorsing Cao Pi.
That was the message, loud and clear. These weren't just coincidences. They were presented as divine signals, undeniable proof.
And then they looked to the stars as well.
They did. Zhu Zi, who was in charge of astronomy, added his observations. He reported that the Han's destiny, its key, was visibly fading in the heavens.
Fading? How could they tell?
Well, that's what he claimed to see. He said the Han's celestial influence, Yanhan Qishu, was ending. Meanwhile, Wei's signs, Wei Guo Kangxiang, were ascendant, bright, powerful. It added this sort of pseudo-scientific weight to it all.
Earthly signs, heavenly signs, they were covering all the bases. But then came the prophecy, the Tu Chen. That sounds really intriguing.
It really is. Uzi presented this riddle-like prophecy.
Beauty charm.
Okay, that sounds like complete gibberish to me. How did they interpret that?
Ah, but it wasn't gibberish to them, or at least they presented an interpretation that was anything but. It's a clever character puzzle.
Go on.
Okay, so Gi plus Wei makes Wei Cao Pai's state. Then Yan, meaning word, beside U, two suns shining side by side, moving up and down, that forms the character Chang, meaning Xuchang, the capital.
Clever. Put it all together.
Wei Yuncheng should prosperously receive the Han's abdication. It pointed directly at the desired outcome.
Wow. That's incredibly convenient. But did people buy it? Did they actually believe these riddles and signs, or was it just, you know, pressure? That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's hard to know for sure what was genuine belief versus coerced acceptance. But when you have officials presenting myths, astronomy, prophecies, it creates this overwhelming sense that it's inevitable. Questioning it feels like questioning reality itself.
So what about Emperor Xian in the middle of all this? Did he believe any of it? Or just see it for the power play it was?
Oh, his reaction was pure anguish, according to the sources. Shock, tears. He flatly refused. He said he couldn't betray his ancestors, that 400-year legacy. He called the signs and prophecies false and absurd.
You feel for him there. It's not just politics, it's his whole world ending.
Exactly. It's that raw human element. Forget the cosmology for a second. This is a man watching his family's dynasty crumble.
But the pressure just kept coming. They didn't back down.
Not for a moment. It was relentless. You had Wang Lang chiming in, talking about the natural cycle of rise and fall. Legacies rise, dynasties fall, nothing lasts forever. It was constant psychological pressure.
Designed to wear him down.
Completely. To make resistance seem not just futile, but almost unnatural, going against the tide of history, or even heaven.
And eventually, he just retreated, overwhelmed. But then Empress Cao stepped in, That must have been dramatic.
Hugely dramatic. Remember, she's Cao Pai's sister. She confronts Huaxin and the others, absolutely furious. She calls her brother's actions a rebellion, Liuan Nizishi.
Wow, gutsy.
She even says their father, Cao Cao, for all his ambition, never would have dared to usurp the throne like this. She's weeping. Her attendants are weeping. It's this incredible moment of internal family conflict.
It shows it wasn't just a unified front. Even within the Cao family.
Exactly. It adds that layer of complexity. It's not just bad guys forcing out a good guy. There were nuances, disagreements, even within the group seizing power.
But even the Empress's fierce loyalty couldn't stop it. Things turned forceful then.
That seemed to be the turning point. The persuasion failed, so coercion began. Cao Hong and Cao Xiu, swords drawn, literally dragged the Emperor out.
Dragged him.
Forcibly led him out. And Huaxin, he confronts the Emperor, actually grabs his dragon robe, demanding an answer. Right now, he threatens disaster, Kongguaki, calamity right within the palace walls, tells him he doesn't have the luck of a ruler anymore.
Grabbing the emperor's robe, the disrespect is staggering. The power dynamic is completely naked at that point.
Absolutely brutal. It's pure intimidation, showing everyone his authority meant nothing
now. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
But in that moment of terror, someone actually stood up.
Yes, a flash of incredible bravery. Zhu Bi, the Imperial Seal Officer, the Fu Baolang, when Cao Hong demanded the Imperial Seal.
The symbol of his authority.
Zhu Bi refused point blank, called it the Son of Heaven's treasure. He cursed them, and they executed him right there on the spot.
Oh my God.
It's this incredibly poignant act of loyalty amidst all the fear and compliance. He's remembered in a poem as a true loyal minister, a reminder that even when things seem hopeless, individual courage can still shine.
The tragic, heroic moment. After seeing that, it's hardly surprising Emperor Xian finally broke.
Completely. The sources say he was trembling, looking at the hundreds of armed Wei soldiers. He basically begged for his life and the lives of his family in return for the throne. He agreed to issue the abdication decree.
Just devastating. So the decree is issued, but the maneuvering wasn't over, was it? Jia Xu had some advice.
Right. Jia Xu, the strategist, knew they needed to move fast. Issue the decree quickly, he said, to calm the people's hearts. Make it look like a done deal, seem voluntary, prevent unrest.
Okay. Standard procedure for a coup, maybe? But then Sima Yi steps in with a counterintuitive idea.
Ah, Sima Yi, always playing the long game. He tells Cao Pai, don't accept the first decree.
Decline? Why?
He advised Cao Pai to decline twice. It was brilliant political theater.
How so?
By refusing, Cao Pai appears humble, reluctant. It makes him look like he isn't grabbing power greedily. Sima Yi said it would cut off the slanders of the world. Yi Jue Tiang says Yi Bang. It wasn't real humility. It was performed legitimacy.
Performing legitimacy. I like that. So it was all about managing optics.
Precisely. And this move, this ritual refusal, it actually became kind of a standard playbook for future dynastic changes in China. Create that image of the virtuous successor being persuaded, almost forced, to take the throne.
So Cao Pai actually sent back these letters saying, no, thank you, I'm not worthy, twice.
He did, twice. And you can imagine Emperor Xin's confusion and distress. Huaxin had to keep reassuring him, no, this is normal. It's all part of the established procedure.
The procedure for forcing someone off their throne. The tragic irony is thick.
It really is. This whole elaborate dance was designed to whitewash the coercion that had just happened. Staging these refusals created this crucial illusion of choice.
Okay, so after the second refusal, they finally accept.
Yeah.
Or is there more stagecraft?
One final massive piece of stagecraft. Jia Xu again. He suggests building a huge, receiving the abdication altar, the Xu Chantan at Fanyang.
An altar? Why?
To make it public. A grand spectacle. This wasn't just signing papers. It was a performance for the entire court, the army, the world. Ceremony and symbolism are incredibly powerful tools for cementing political change. The bigger the show, the more real it seems.
So what did this altar look like? What was the scene?
Imagine this. A massive three-tiered platform. They picked a super auspicious date and time, 10th month, Gengwu Day, Yin Hour. You've got over 400 officials there. And get this. More than 300,000 imperial guards watching.
300,000.
That's the number given. A massive military presence witnessing Emperor Xin himself handing the imperial seal, the symbol of everything, over to Cao Pai. The psychological weight of that moment must have been immense.
Unbelievable. And there was a proclamation read out.
Yes, a formal abdication proclamation. And crucially, it explicitly linked Cao Pai taking the throne to the ancient sage kings Yao and Shun, who were famous for peacefully yielding power to the most virtuous person.
Ah, invoking the ultimate precedent for legitimate, non-hereditary succession.
Exactly. It framed the whole event not as a usurpation, but as history repeating itself righteously. The Han Mandate was gone. Cao Cao's virtue, passed to Cao Pai, demanded this change, just like in ancient times. They were literally rewriting history as it happened.
Crafting the narrative right there on the altar steps.
That's exactly what it was.
So, ceremony done, seal handed over. Cao Pai is officially emperor.
Officially emperor. He receives the 8 grand rites, proclaims the start of the Huangxu era yellow beginning, establishing the Great Wei Dynasty, and one of his first acts, posthumously naming his father, Cao Cao, as Emperor Wu.
Consolidating power, honoring the lineage. Very swift move.
Calculated and decisive, building the foundation of the new dynasty immediately.
But what happened to Emperor Xian, the man at the center of all this?
Hor Xin, predictably, wanted him gone immediately. Remove him from the palace now.
Harsh.
But Cao Pai made a show of mercy. He gave Xian the title Duke of Shanyang. Sounds okay, but it came with an order. Leave the capital immediately and don't come back to court unless summoned.
So, preserve his life, but exile him completely. Strip him of any remaining dignity or influence.
A classic move for dealing with deposed rulers. Keep them alive but powerless, far from anyone who might rally around them. The sources say Xian left in tears, and many watching were saddened.
A truly bleak end to 400 years.
Yeah.
And then Cao Pai says something quite revealing to his officials.
Yes, a really chilling line. He looks at them and declares, "Now I understand the affairs of Shun and Yu."
Shun and Yu. The sage kings he was just compared to in the proclamation.
Exactly. He's basically saying, now I get how those legendary voluntary abdications really worked. He's implicitly acknowledging the performance, the coercion, while simultaneously wrapping himself in the legitimacy of those ancient myths. It's incredibly self-aware and cynical.
He's saying the quiet part out loud, almost.
Wow.
But just as he's having this moment of triumph,
yeah,
nature intervenes again.
Right then, yes. A bizarre, violent storm kicks up seemingly out of nowhere, right there at the altar. Sand, stones flying, visibility drops to zero, all the candles are blown out. Cao Pai himself is apparently so startled he collapses. He's sick for days afterwards.
An ill omen, if ever there was one.
It's incredibly symbolic in the narrative, isn't it? After all that meticulous statecraft to prove divine approval, the heavens themselves seem to disagree quite violently. It injects this note of profound unease, hinting that maybe this wasn't so blessed after all.
Did this omen have practical effects?
It seems so. Cao Pai was apparently spooked by these evil omens at Xuchang. Combined with his illness, it prompted him to move the capital to the ancient, more prestigious city of Luoyang. And of course, he rewarded the key players.
Paying off the supporting cast.
Standard practice. There's a poem mentioned in the source that reflects on this whole event.
Oh, what does it say?
It critiques Cao Pai, saying he tried to imitate the ancient sages Yao and Shun, but then it adds this ominous line, basically predicting that the Sima family would eventually come along and show everyone how usurpation is really done.
Foreshadowing the end of Cao Wei itself at the hands of the Simas. That's incredible. History echoing itself, or perhaps learning from the playbook.
It suggests that the methods used to gain power can set dangerous precedents, ones that might eventually be turned against you.
Devastating news for Liu Bei.
Yep.
Cao Pai, up in Luoyang, declares himself Emperor of Wei.
He's ditching the Han. He's usurping the throne.
Right. And there's this really nasty rumor flying around, too.
Uh-huh. That the current Han Emperor, Emperor Xian, has actually been killed as part of this. Not just deposed, but killed.
Liu Bei. He was the king of Hanzong then.
Oh, the sources say he was just overcome, weeping for days.
He even ordered mourning clothes for his officials, held a memorial.
And gave the late emperor a posthumous title, Emperor Shouman.
Yeah, and all this grief and worry, it actually made him sick. Really sick.
So sick he had to hand over the reins, temporarily at least, to Zhu Zilang.
His top strategist. Okay, so Liu Bei is out of action, basically. What happens next? His team can't just sit around, right?
No way. The situation was too unstable. So Zhu Liang gets together with the other key figures, people like Xu Jing.
He was the grand tutor, so a really senior advisor.
Very senior. And Cao Zhu, the grand master of remonstrance, his job was literally to point out potential problems or mistakes.
Right. So the top brass.
Exactly. And they all agree the world cannot be without a ruler for a single day.
So they need their own emperor. And Liu Bei is the obvious choice.
He's Han royalty after all. They decide he has to take the throne.
But it wasn't just practical politics, was it? I mean, the sources talk about omens and signs.
Hugely important. It was about legitimacy. Kiao Zhu, especially, made a big case based on divine signs.
Like what kinds of signs?
Well, specific things. Auspicious winds and propitious clouds, apparently. More dramatically, this yellow energy. Yeah, yellow being the imperial color, you know. Dozens of feet high, rising from Chengdu, supposedly rushing to the heavens.
Wow.
And astronomical signs, too. The Emperor Star, a specific star associated with the ruler, supposedly appeared bright as the moon in certain constellations, Bi, Wei, and Mao.
So Cao Zhu is basically saying, look, heaven itself is pointing to Liu Bei.
Precisely. He presents these as undeniable proof, not just lineage, but a mandate from heaven.
So these omens, they weren't just happy coincidences people noticed. Were they being, let's say, interpreted for political gain? What was the function?
Oh, absolutely. Think of it as divine TR. It was a powerful way to say, this isn't just our idea, heaven approves. It swayed people. It countered Cao Pai's claim.
Right. It makes his claim legitimate in a way people back then would understand and respect.
Exactly. It removes doubt, or at least it's supposed to. So armed with these omens and the political arguments, Zhu Jiliang and Zhu Jing lead a whole crowd of officials to formally ask Liu Bei to take the throne.
Okay, so you've got the political pressure, you've got the divine signs. Surely now Liu Bei accepts, given his whole life was about restoring the Han.
You'd think so. But no, his reaction is, well, pretty explosive.
What did he do?
He was shocked, actually accused them. He said, are you trying to trap me into being disloyal and unrighteous?
Whoa, strong words.
Very. He directly compared the idea to what Cao Pai did, calling it treacherous, and then he just stormed off. Flat refusal.
Okay, so he's really digging his heels in. What's the next move for Zhu Jiliang and the others? They don't just give up, do they?
Not a chance. They wait 3 days, then try again. This time, Zhu Jing confronts him directly.
What was his argument?
A clever one. He basically turned Liu Bei's own argument around. He said, look, not taking the throne now, not fighting the usurper Cao Pai, that would be the real disloyalty. That would be letting the Han down.
Playing the duty card.
And warning him, saying he'd lose the people's hope, which for Liu Bei, who built his reputation on being the virtuous alternative, would be devastating.
That's a powerful counter. But Liu Bei still wasn't convinced. What was his reason this time?
He falls back on humility, says, yes, he's descended from Emperor Jing, but he doesn't have the virtue and beneficence, the moral rightness, the goodness to rule.
So he feels unworthy.
Or at least that's what he says. He asks, how is this different from usurpation if I just declare myself emperor? He just resolutely refused again and again.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Is this genuine modesty? Is it a performance, making sure he looks like he's being forced into it for the history books? Or is he actually scared of the burden, maybe?
It's impossible to know for sure, but it's likely a mix of all three. Politics, personal feeling, fear of judgment. It's complex.
Okay, so Liu Bei is stuck. He won't budge. This is where Zhu Jiliang really shows his genius, right? Not just military strategy, but psychological stuff.
Absolutely. Zhu Jiliang comes up with a plan. A very sneaky, very effective plan.
Which was?
He pretends to be seriously ill, takes to his bed, won't get up, says he's gravely sick.
And Liu Bei, being loyal to his friend and advisor.
Exactly. He's worried sick about Zhu Jiliang, rushes over to his house, goes right to his bedside. He deeply valued Zhu Jiliang.
The trap is set. What does Zhu Jiliang do then?
He puts on a real performance, starts lamenting, says he's dying from a burning heart, all because Liu Bei won't take the throne.
Laying it on thick.
Oh, yeah. He paints this dire picture. If Liu Bei refuses, all the loyal officials will scatter, their whole base in the two rivers will be vulnerable to Wei and Wu. It's strategic blackmail wrapped in emotional appeal.
Wait.
And then he hits him with a proverb. Heaven offers, but if you don't take it, you'll be blamed. Basically, don't refuse destiny or you'll regret it.
That's intense. Playing on loyalty, fear, strategy, destiny. But Liu Bei still hesitates. Even then.
One last flicker of resistance. He says he's still afraid of what the people of the world will say. Reputation again.
Always worried about appearances.
But Zhu Jiliang has the perfect comeback. He quotes a sage, probably Confucius. If the name is not right, then words are not smooth.
What does that mean exactly, if the name is not right?
It's about legitimacy. If your title, your position, your name isn't correct according to morals and the proper order of things, then your actions and words won't have authority or flow correctly. They won't be effective.
So Zhu Jiliang is saying Liu Bei's claim is right.
Exactly. He says Liu Bei's claim is name right and word smooth. because of his lineage, because Cao Pi is a usurper, because of the omens. He's saying your title is justified, so your rule will be smooth. There's no argument against it. It's a final checkmate.
And then comes the big reveal.
Yes. Zhuge Liang dramatically leaps out of bed, clearly not sick at all, hits a screen.
A screen.
Yeah, like a room divider. And suddenly, all the officials who were apparently hiding outside waiting for their cue, they all rush in, bow, and start congratulating Liu Bei.
He walked right into it.
Completely. Liu Bei apparently just exclaimed, "You all have trapped me into unrighteousness." But, you know, he must have known he was beaten.
It really shows Zhuge Liang's mastery, doesn't it? Not just battles, but people. He knew exactly which buttons to push with Liu Bei.
A master psychologist and politician, absolutely. He got the result they needed.
Okay, so Liu Bei finally agrees. Maybe reluctantly, maybe not so reluctantly by the end. What happens next? The coronation.
Preparations start immediately. Zhuge Liang puts Dr. Zhu Qi and Meng Guang in charge of the ceremonies. They build this grand altar south of Wudan near Chengdu.
Setting the stage.
Big time. Then comes the ceremony itself, very solemn, very formal. Officials lead Liu Bei up to the altar.
And this is where that sacrificial address comes in, the big speech.
Exactly. Cao Zhu reads it aloud, addressing heaven and earth. And this isn't just flowery language. It's a critical political document.
All right. We talked about omens justifying him, but what else did this speech need to do? What points did it absolutely have to hit?
Okay, key things. First, hammer Cao Cao and Cao Pai. Condemn Cao Cao's past actions, killing the empress, cruelty, and explicitly call Cao Pai's move a treacherous act, seizing the imperial seal. Establish the villain.
Got it. Contrast.
Second, justify Liu Bei. Call him the rightful heir to the Han lineage. Mention heaven's mandate. Connect him to the Han founders, Emperor Gao and Guangwu. Say he's there to enforce heaven's punishment, divine right.
Lineage and destiny. Check.
Third, show popular and broad support. Claim he consulted the people, even distant rulers, and everyone agreed the empire needs a master, and he's the one.
So it's not just him wanting it.
Right. And finally, maintain his image. Mention his hesitation, his fear of letting the great Han legacy down, makes him seem duty-bound, not power-hungry.
It really covers all the bases, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Condemns the enemy, establishes his right, shows support, keeps him looking virtuous. Very thorough.
It had to be. It was meant to solidify his rule and completely undermine Cao Pai.
And in the final moment, accepting the seal, did he still hesitate?
Just a little bit, according to the sources. Pushed it away a few times. A final bit of political theater, maybe?
The reluctant ruler to the very end.
But Zhuge Liang steps in quickly, says, "Nope, it's done. Consecrated before the gods. You can't refuse now."
And that was it.
That was it. The officials shout, "Long live!" Liu Bei takes the seal. The Shu Han dynasty is born.
A new era begins. They called it Zongwu, right?
Meaning magnificent and martial. Yes.
Right.
And then came the appointments. Empress Wu, Liu Shan as crown prince, Zhuge Liang as chancellor, Zhu Jing as grand commandant. Promotions all around.
And a general amnesty. People must have been relieved, happy even.
Definitely. Joy in the two rivers, the sources say. It looks like the perfect start. Order restored, legitimacy declared.
But I sense a but coming.
There's always a but in this period. The very next day, the brand new first emperor holds court. And his first official decree.
Yes. What was it? Something about consolidating power. Rebuilding.
Nope. He stands up and reminds everyone about the Peach Garden Oath. His sworn brotherhood with Guan Yu and Zhang Fei.
Okay. Where is this going?
He declares he's raising a massive army immediately. To invade Eastern Wu, capture Sun Quan, and avenge Guan Yu's death.
What? Are you serious? After all that effort to appear legitimate, reluctant, focused on restoring the Han, his first move is personal revenge.
His very first command as emperor, it must have stunned the court.
Mm.
A huge gamble strategically.
Yeah.
Wu was supposed to be a potential ally against Wei, wasn't it?
Exactly. This seems incredibly risky.
Mm.
And emotionally driven.
Deeply emotional. And just as he finishes saying this, someone steps forward.
Oh.
General Zhao Yun. One of his most steadfast, loyal, and level-headed commanders. He steps out, bows, and starts to argue against the emperor's first command.
Wow. Right away. Objecting to the emperor's first order.